Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's Guitar Nerds Gear of the Year!
Hello and welcome to the Gear of the Year podcast series, the Guitar Nerds Gear of the Year podcast series for 2020. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by JD Short.
Hello everybody, it's nice to see you.
And Naomi McLeod.
I don't have a cool jingle, so hello.
That's totally fine. Yes, and we are, this is the first, dear listener, you'll be aware, this is something like the fourth episode that you've listened to of the Gear of the Year podcast series. And as I stated on the previous episode, which was effects, it was a very long episode, that one. As I stated, this episode, we're switching up the hosts to the bass team because this is the Gear of the Year podcast episode for Best Bass Thing of 2020. Now, as was the case with a lot of the other categories, it's been a little bit of a stagnant year. Also, I guess part of it is that, you know, I was only doing a bass series for the latter part of the year, so I maybe haven't had my ear to the ground quite to the extent I had with the other things, but it's also been a little bit slow. So there were kind of less things to talk about. So we decided, whilst we're going to talk about bass guitars, bass effects, and bass amps individually, there's only going to be one crowning prize here, so we'll be awarding two runners-up places and one victorious winner, which will be crowned the greatest bass thing of 2020, rather than each thing getting its own category. So, for example, we could end up with three basses. We could end up with a bass, an effects pedal, and an amplifier, or any combination. Isn't that exciting? Yes, it is. Well, yes, I'm hoping this one's going to be, I think this one's going to be more exciting. Potentially less argumentative, because I trust the opinions of my co-hosts on this one far more than I do, you know, like Matt Knight, who has the world's biggest bedroom rig and has never played outside of his bedroom, and you know, Jay and Mark, who, is, as far as I can tell, don't like guitar. you know,
it's not a great start.
No, exactly. Always difficult. But yes, so on this episode, we're going to talk about our favorite things. So we've shortlisted, I'll read you out, dear listener, the shortlist of products that we've come up with so far. So the things that we kind of boiled it down to that we were excited about this year were the Ashdown Lowrider bass, the Serik Grand bass, the Fender American Pro 2 Precision bass, the Music Man Stingray Short Scale, the Nordstrand, how do you say it?
Acinonyx.
Acinonyx, the cat bass. So the Nordstrand cat bass, the Reverend Wattplower Mark II, the Empress bass compressor, the Boss OC5, the Warm Audio Foxytone Fuzz, the Orange Biamp bass pedal, the Ashdown Ant bass amplifier, the Orange Little Bass Thing, and then two entries from Dark Glass, the Dark Glass Alpha Omega 500 head, and the Dark Glass Element headphone amplifier. Those are the things that we ended up talking to. Also, kind of honorable mentions to products that sort of made it in, but, you know, then we didn't end up talking about so much. Solar have moved into the world of basses this year, and, you know, everything that's come out of Ola England's brand Solar has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, the man has single-handedly moved the metal world out of passive and into hardtail out of active and into passive hardtail instruments. So, you know, very, very cool instruments. I can't wait to try them, but we just didn't know enough about them. Elric introduced their modern vintage series, so doing some proper classic P and J style instruments. I think that's it. That was kind of it. There were some other cool things as well, but I think that's it. Those are the things that didn't quite make it into our shortlist. Anyway, so we're not going to talk about all the things I've discussed. We've highlighted a handful of things that we want to each put forward. I've done a lot of talking. So let's start things off. JD, why don't you start us off with your first product that you'd like to bring to the table?
I mean, the first one I'd like to talk about is the Nordstrand Acinanix short scale cat bass.
We should prefix this by saying this I think is a really strong opener for this and a real strong contender for Gear of the Year.
I mean, I think, you know, we talked about on this show, like, I'm not necessarily one of, like, I have yet to be super enamored by short scales. Although this year it seems different, but like I was able to play this bass at NAMM last year in person when that was a thing, and it just absolutely blew me away with how fun it was, how versatile it was. The four push button pickup selector switches is just super cool, you know, because it has the basically, you know, there's no blend. It's just you push button. It's very, very vintagey, just very, very cool. I know we talked about it for 20, 30 minutes at least on another episode, but yeah, like it's the one inspired by Juan Alderete's, like his Goya Panther, and yeah, everything. Like I just think these basses are so cool and hip and hit like a very specific, they're not like anything else currently out there for a big name, but also still small. And I think they're just stunning.
So. It was a really unusual choice for Nordstrand, considering the Nordy basses that I think were the bread and butter of the brand. And certainly even when it comes to pickups, I think of them as being quite a modern brand in kind of sentiment and aesthetic and everything. This was super vintagey, traditional, you know, like a cheap vintage guitar.
Yeah, like I think it's, yeah, I think that's the thing that really kind of stood out to me as well, because like a lot of the basses that Kerry would make would be, you know, a lot of, you see like the very high end, like five strings, like active, you know, that would sit alongside like the Elrics or the Sadowskis or like that sort of vibe. And then something like this is just like, it's just so cool because it's a bass that most people don't have. Or if you do, you have room for something like this. You know, and I think they're roughly, what, 700, 800 US?
800 US, yeah.
So, you know, like it's a high quality bass for not necessarily something that's really going to break the bank. Like it's, you know, it's one you think about for a bit and then go, yeah, I want to get one, you know, and I just can't really say enough good things about these. I think they're excellent.
For how unusual they are, they have some really cool details in the in their webpage as well. I think you have like six options of how you want it to be strung when you order it from Nordstrand, which I love as well. And you can select on top of your finish, you can select your pick guard, which is a nice touch also.
Yeah, I think that's...
I like that attention to detail for $800, I think, is pretty hard to come by. On top of the already amazing design of the instrument itself.
Yeah, completely. And you absolutely... So the button things, they were on the original, the Goya Panther, right?
Yeah.
And yeah. And there are like... Because it's just a single master volume, and then the four... The switches... what, each individual pickup, and then are they operating tone as well?
Yeah, so there's a flat tone, you have like a roll off, there's a massive roll off, and then there's like a mid notch sort of tone switch, basically. I'd have to remember what it is, but it's just so interesting to like push a button. So you have the four pickup selectors, four tone selectors, and then you just have a volume knob. Like that's basically it's just one of those super cool like click click. Oh, that's a great sound. You know, mm-hmm. like
it's so cool. You're right. It's so original, so incredibly well priced for what it is, and so on the money on a year where really short scales are becoming so popular. You know, especially for Fender as their new Mustang basses,
yeah.
and their entire range of sort of Mustangs and Broncos continue to expand and just be incredibly popular. This yeah. is the right time to release a super cool short scale. I completely agree with you, JD. I think we're all in agreement. This is on the money. It looks really cool. It's got some great options.
I mean, I think the 800 US price point and the, you know, and the fact that it's like they're all inspected in Carrie's shop. They're all, you know, before they go out and that's sort of that model. And it's just, it's one of those things, like, it's really cool. It's something you can get that's not in that over 1,000 point, you know, because, like, that's when it starts to be like, okay, so I'm expecting a bit of differences. But, yeah, like, I think price point-wise, I struggle to find something else. Yeah.
It's the sort of thing I'd expect Eastwood to reissue. Yeah. But then I'd be happy with the price tag of 800 quid. I'd buy it and I'd accept those imperfections in the fact that, you know, Eastwoods are relatively cheaply made and manufactured. I'd accept that all because it's so vibey. But with this being a, you know, a Kerry Nordstrand instrument, you're actually getting something that's in incredible quality and is checked over at his shop. I just think, it's unusual. There's nothing like this at the moment. It's very cool, very interesting. Yeah, a super strong contender. I think we're all in agreement there.
Yeah.
Naomi, why don't you bring something else to the table?
Well, Joe, it's another short scale bass. Are you surprised? No, you're not. Cool. No. Okay. There's a few things I'd like to talk about this evening, but. Absolutely, the Sarek Grand, I think, has to be first out the gate for me. As I've talked about Sarek, we've talked about Sarek quite a little bit. Super cool. Small company working out of Chicago, is it? It's Chicago. Basically the Grand is the first batch from an otherwise custom builder. So... Jake Sarek has now done two batches. He did his most recent batch of the Grand, I think it was this very month, December. He sold out the batch in 75 minutes. So people are absolutely catching on to these new batch builds. When we talk about the more recent of the two, because he's done different finishes, but otherwise identical specs. So, we've got a short scale with a maple neck. We've got a
roasted maple neck.
Indeed.
Yeah. It's lovely.
Indeed. More roasted, the more gooder it is, also, to reference Black Books. And how would we describe the body shape? I mean, it's quite unusual. Definitely vintage styled. I'm not
sure. Kind of guild-y? It's got that sort of guild B series.
Right
vibe to it, but
I couldn't put my finger on an exact kind of a hark that he was going for with that. I mean, it's a wholly unusual body setup. Really, everything is sort of offset. We've got an bias racing stripe cutting across the body as well as an offset pick guard, and to top it off, an offset pickup. So the pickup he has put in is the TV Jones Thunderblade pickup in mid position. So yeah, you're going to get your full punch, whack and boom out of that. I also need to bring up that there is an onboard fuzz circuit on this bass.
This is outrageous.
This blows my mind. Like this would have been, I would say, the cherry on top to push me into the queue for the Grand had I been in line for a new bass with the release of this. We all need onboard fuzz circuits.
It's passive as well.
Yeah.
So you don't have to mess around.
Yeah.
Oh,
amazing.
It's so good. I don't know why more things don't have fuzz circuits on board, but outrageous.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, I don't want to be just listing the specs. Like, what you need to know if you don't know about Sarek Bases is he's an passionate and authentic builder of incredible instruments. I was lucky to play a few just that I've kind of seen in passing. The first was, I think, Tim Lefebvre's Silver Midwestern, and yeah, kind of saw a few kind of batches since then, and ones that he's built for people. The quality is unbelievable. The price point's insane. It's
how much are these batch builds going for?
These were they 1500 US, I think.
Yeah, it was.
They were less, actually. I think they were 1000 US.
Yeah, I think.
What?
Yeah, 1000 US, I believe, was the number.
Why didn't I buy this?
Yeah, Joe. Was seriously,
because it was in that first.
I didn't like the color. Oh yeah, yeah. That was that is actually the
you
reason,
didn't like
it?
The color. Do not come at me and tell me that you don't like a gold racing stripe on a black instrument with
oh,
a
oh no,
black
that
sparkle
I do like.
Guard.
The second one, yeah, the second one I can 100% get behind. Everything should be black or somber. So that I'm totally on board with.
Good. Good. I mean the first one was super out there color. It was like a yellow with a sort of a.
Yeah, it was very DHL.
Can we quote you on that and send it to Sarah?
I mean, not saying it's a bad thing. It just, you know, it definitely, you know, you're not going to see anyone from FedEx or UPS playing that bass.
Right, yeah. Right. I can't unsee that now that you've said it. Super sharp and super out there, whereas he's gone for the... I don't know, maybe it's a summer-winter thing. He's gone for the black sparkle and black with the second batch, so...
I mean, the black sparkle is unreal. Also, I just want to try to help by reconditioning. I think that, like, the DHL, that bass really gives me, like... It feels, like, very, like, 1960s, like, Italian film vibes. It feels very,
for sure.
You know, like, yeah. Fiati, like, some sort of, like... spy romance movie from like an Italian 1960s scene.
Yeah, so absolutely. I was sorry, I'm double checking here. I need to go back myself. I was way off with the price for batch number two. Batch number two is on the site at 1900 US.
I see. Still very, very good for what you're getting for a kind of a custom shop build with a built-in fuzz circuit, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, less money than a Fender Professional P-Bass.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that is still very, very good.
Yeah, and still super stoked to see what he has in store next year. I think 2020 was the first year of his kind of five-string builds for people as well, so I don't doubt we'll see more of them. But yeah, the Grand, very cool. Ticks all my weird criteria as well.
Yeah, incredibly another really strong contender, I think, for Gear of the Year. Now, my first entry, and I'll stick with basses, seeing as we seem to be going for them first, is and you know, predictably, as obviously I've let everyone know on the podcast that I am now employed by Ashdown Amplifiers to do their social media and whatnot, but I'm absolutely going to rep the Lowrider, their basses. So Ashdown started doing basses for the first time this year. They introduced like a slew of models that they'd teamed up with Dan Larkin from Lackland basses. And of course, you know, the Lackland basses and D Larkin basses have existed for some time, making Leo Fender-esque body shapes, P and J's, as of course the wonderful, wonderful audience of social media are always keen to remind me whenever I post a picture of an Ashdown P or J. So thanks for that, everyone, because of course I had no idea. Anyway, but yes, the Ashdown have released a slew of basses, all in kind of cool classic designs. But then they had the Lowrider, which is very interesting. Now, the Ox was a big user of Ashdown basses in his time, and And John Entwistle was indeed a friend of Mark Gooday, the owner and founder of Ashdown Amplifiers. And so I think the bass that has kind of Mark's hand in it far more than any of the others is the Lowrider, which is a very obvious hats off to John Entwistle's Fenderbird, which is when he took the body of a Thunderbird bass and added a bolt-on Fender neck. I can't remember if it was a Precision or a Jazz. I think it was a P-neck that he added to it to make kind of a mix of both instruments. And Ashdown have kind of taken a little bit of a hats off there, because this is a Thunderbird style body, but it's bolt-on, so already kind of far more in line with kind of the way most bass players play. And then kind of a simple 34 inch scale, predictable hand oiled, very modern neck with a real taper on it. So a real jazz style neck. And then when it comes to, and it's very tapered as well. It's a really fine jazz bass neck, which I found made the whole thing surprisingly very, very playable, despite the shape of the instrument maybe kind of, being more of a showy instrument. So it's going to be more difficult if you find yourself if you play fingerstyle and you rest your arm a lot on the instrument.
Then, yeah.
I found this surprisingly comfortable, and I found myself surprisingly coming back to it over and over more than I was any of the others. And then when it came to pickups, they put two massive passive 8-pole big Music Man style humbuckers with jazz bass style control, so a volume tone, hip shot tuners, Wilkinson hardware, kind of a range of finishes, and an option for rosewood or maple neck. It was just something that I realized no one was really doing, and I thought it was a really cool option, and especially to have Dan Larkin's name in association with it, you're getting a real quality instrument. And they come in at just under £1,000. They're made in Korea in the same factory as Reverend, who I'm sure Brand will be talking about on this podcast as well. Mm-hmm. But just as an absolute, as a real kind of slicer call, something that's worth a real nod on this year's Gear of the Year. I thought very cool bass. Certainly for anyone who's looking for something a little bit different, but doesn't necessarily want that Gibson sound.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm into the I'm just into the mix of specs. I like that on the maple neck you get your block inlays as well.
Yeah.
Hipshot hardware is always an absolute plus. And I want to hear those massive pickups, because I have a similar configuration on my Reverend Mercalli. On mine it's kind of a PJ, but it's those those brick kind of music style pickups, and they sound huge. Like I definitely like them as a pickup configuration. So I'm keen to hear this for sure.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's so much more full range almost than anything else I would normally play. It's just such a kind of a complete sound. I feel very 80s when I play this, because it's got that kind of zing that you get with kind of that sort of very full. Range toppy sound. I find myself always rolling off the neck pickup a little bit, relying more on the bridge and just getting that real kind of that honk, that sort of 80s honk. It a perfect aggressive metal bass in the same way as it's actually incredibly articulate and surprisingly comfortable. But yeah, a super cool bass.
Nice.
Now, I think we've got one more bass to go into the mix here. We've got a couple more. We've got two more, haven't we? Sorry, yes, we've got two more. JD, why don't you take us away?
Well, I was also going to talk about, here we go, the Music Man, the Stingray Short Scale, which is obviously new for this year, which is the point of the show, but it was just really intrigued me in that the Stingrays themselves, like the entire history of the Stingray has always been, that next step from a jazz, from a P into the the Stingray with Active Electronics having that, like, that classic, like, boosted low, zingy treble. You know, it's like, it's all of those vibes, taking it into sort of a short scale, which one, just playability-wise, but I think it also really starts to show just how versatile, like, the Stingray bass itself can be. So that, you know, right. The single pickup, it's just a really cool classic, fairly traditional, like, shape, in the sense that, you know, it's a shape that's been around for, you know, 50 years, but it's also I just thought it's super cool that, you know, that it comes in you know, basically a three-tone burst, or like, was it blue, gray, metal flake?
Starry,
you know,
like
those are your options. It's, and to be fair, if you sit down to think about it, it's like, those are probably the two choices that I would end up going with. It's like, do I want this to be more, you know, like, more vibey, just sort of, you know, like, am I playing more roots kind of music and I want, like, that sort of feel, or do I still want this to be like a metal flake finish? And then, you know, really just with everything that's, you know, like, Music Man, like, this, it's just everything about it is quality. They're absolutely stunning. Roasted Necks, you know, like, everything. It's just, you know, like, the necks are all, like, oil and wax finished, like, aluminum or aluminium control cover, you know. It's just like, it's like everything has actually been thought about, like, all the, like, taking the weight and making sure that it's positioned properly and everything. It's just, yeah, they're stunning for a 22 fret 30 inch bass.
Like, yeah, next on Music Man, there's nothing like them. Like, the attention to detail and the quality finishing on the necks of Music Man guitars. And I feel like they're, you know, roasting maple became popular a few years ago, and I think it was perfected by Music Man. Like, yeah. They get it right. It looks so good. That sort of oil on the back of the neck that then switches with that line to gloss for the headstock is just always absolutely incredible.
Well, and I mean, the other thing is, like, I know we keep kind of coming back to this, but when we did that factory tour a few years ago with them, and I say factory tour like it's a book, when we were at their factory walking around, and it's just like the necks that they put out, like, for just, you know, like, standard build base level, like, whatever you're getting kind of necks, were some of the best necks I've still seen to this day.
Yeah.
Like, even for whatever level of, like, you know, boutique builder showcase, like NAMM style, like, they're just, were just, like, unreal amount of flame and bird's eye and everything that was there. It's just, yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that they didn't separate off bits for, you know, I mean, they certainly do for Ball Family Reserve, but they didn't tear anything. It's just the everything is incredible from the, you know, I mean, admittedly, the most affordable Music Man is still going to set you back the best part of £2,000. But, you know, everything from there upwards was absolutely incredible. Yeah, completely a welcome addition, a short scale Stingray. But yeah, super cool. Okay, well, we've got one more bass before we move on into amplifiers and effects. There are far less that we've come up with in those categories. So, Naomi, why don't you talk to us about your last bass suggestion?
Absolutely. Do you want to guess what scale it is, Joe?
Well, I don't know. Do we need to on the short scale bass Guitar Nerds podcast?
It's not a re-release. It's a Mark II of a wonderful model that we were graced with just a few short years ago. It's the Mike Watt Wattplower Mark II by Reverend. Yes. So, I mean, you know, I was a little biased in that I was already a huge fan of the Wattplower Mark I. Played one in a store, was just bowled over. I mean, anyone familiar to Reverend, it won't come as news to you, you know, that these guys really like to impress with every release. Like, there's, you know, there's some kick-ass new feature, with whether it's whether it's a weird pickup configuration, whether it's crazy new finishes, whether it's just a model where, you know, like the Triad, where like the configuration is just not really like much else that's on the market currently.
Yeah.
So with the Watt Player Mark II, with the Mark I, we had, I think it was just a pretty classic P configuration.
That's and right, yeah.
There's like a, is it like a triple P plus a Pitbull pickup at the neck?
It's outrageous. It's 1.5 precision pickups.
It is, yeah. Exactly. It's 1.5 P configuration plus the, yeah, Rio Grande, sorry, make the Pitbull pickup, which is at the neck. So yeah, overall, you have just a hugely, you know, added aggression versus the Mark One, and you've got your hip shot hardware. You've got it's a rosewood neck, I think, isn't it, or Palfaro?
Yeah,
Palfaro one and two interchangeable.
Yeah,
but yeah,
it's a Palfaro neck, and it's as with most if not all Reverends, it's that beautiful Carina body. So you've got that really characterful tone overall. Yeah, and it's in a banging emerald green finish as well.
Such a great finish.
Yeah, like it's just so impressive looking. I mean, you know, studio or gig or turning up pretty much anywhere with it, it's going to make an impression before you even hear it, which is one thing I love about, like I said, pretty much all of Reverend's releases. They do make an impact.
The pickup switching on this, I think, is incredibly useful, because it's essentially the high part of that, the precision style pickup, the D and the G, is always engaged, and so it's a three-way toggle, and you're just selecting whether you're playing the bridge E and A part of the pickup, or the neck E and A part of the pickup, or then it's the pit ball completely separately on its own.
Mm-hmm.
So you've kind of got like traditional P bass, you know, sort of toppier P bass, or like EB style bass. I just think those tones really make sense to me as being the three options. You know, like, who really ever uses just a bridge pickup on a jazz bass unless you're playing lead? Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like that's not actually a useful option.
Yeah.
Whereas every tone on this is something that you could use. I think it's a stunning looking bass as well.
I mean, the other things I just want to shout out about it too are the Lumalay side dots, which are my favorite things to come about in the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years about basses. And that they have a synthetic bone nut. One, because bone, gross. Two, it's just like, it's you still getting those, like, it's just such a nice, like, it's a nice feature for a bass like that. Like, it's clearly something that's probably not something that's going to sell it for a lot of people, right? Because you'd be like, I don't know, what's a nut, like 15 quid to put a new nut on at some point. But it's still just like the fact that it comes with a good zingy nut is just really, really great.
this is a really good bass. I feel like this one is, when we come down to sort of counting down everything, this is the one that's sort of going to come in left field for me, because there are a couple of the others that seem a bit more obvious, but this one, just you look at the specs and just even the way the instrument looks, just everything about it is just so good. I feel like they've really nailed it, and it's really something original but also totally usable.
Yeah completely.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks absolutely out there, but so familiar, I guess, you know, like, too, like, if you saw it, you wouldn't be like, oh, that's just a bonkers bass, right? But you look at this and you're like, that's just cool.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just a really well done signature instrument, I think, which,
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm really into this idea of just, like, shoving as many pickups in as possible, so you don't need to put a ramp on it, like all bass players are doing now. You know, just be like, hey, just put a pickup there. That's fine.
Okay, right. Well, I'm going to move us swiftly away from basses. We've had a chunk of them that we're going to be choosing from. I want to talk about something completely different, something that's not an effects pedal or an amplifier. I'm going to talk about the Dark Glass Element, which did get mentioned in the Guitar Nerds podcast, but of course it's so much more appealing to bass players than it was guitarists, even though it works on both, that I think it is worth mentioning here. So Dark Glass obviously have been creating absolutely fantastic, incredible looking stuff for, you know, for some time. I feel like, as I mentioned on the Guitar Nerds podcast, I feel like no one's really nailed making amps look like Apple products quite like Dark Glass have. And they've done a really good job of just capturing this kind of premium modern aesthetic, as well as making the functionality something that appeals to younger professional players, like a move away from big heavy valve stuff or things trying to look traditional or rock and roll with ripped Tolex and beer stains. Like, they are the amplifier for people who play through MacBook Pros, and I actually say that in a good way, but yeah, you know, but the Element is a fantastic unit because it's kind of a headphone amplifier with an onboard bank of 5 cabinet simulators. And then you've got the ability to change those through the Dark Glass suite. But it has a multi-channel USB-C audio connector, so you can use it as an interface. So you can use those cabinet simulators straight into your DAW, whether you're using an active bass with a preamp. Maybe you want to go straight and use the cab sims off of there, because they do come with a predetermined EQ. Or if you want to run a preamp or a Class D, as all Dark Glass heads are, amp head in front of that, then you can do that as well. It basically makes every single Class D head a perfect recording tool as well, which is very good. It's standalone. It can be a headphone amplifier. It has 2 headphone outputs if you want to, I don't know, play to a friend. I don't really know why it has that, but that's fine. That's fine. I don't care about that.
It's better to have than to want.
Exactly. Exactly. And then an XLR output so that you can run it straight into a PA. Which is very handy if you're not using a cab and you just want to go into front of house. You know, you remember when people used to play in venues and stuff. But just as a tool, I think it's incredible. It's something that it looks like Dark Glass are going to continue to expand on, changing the cabinets. They've already added new cabinets via the Dark Glass suite. It'll be interesting to see what direction they take this product in. I feel like it's the sort of thing that could be expanded in the same way, you know, not quite in a bit in the same, a similar way that we see Helix keeps changing because it's just software that you're updating. I think we could see some interesting stuff from Element as a product. This is just, I don't care about headphone practice. That's always just seemed really lame to me. But as a recording tool, I think this is a fantastic looking and fantastic quality product. You know, I didn't mention that everything's touch screen on there as well. The blend of the cab sim and the headphone level, and also the switch between your 5 cab sims.
It's so slick looking. Are those like ribbon ish faders?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's awesome. The one point I would add to that, Joe, is that some of us do have to do headphone practice, you see. And especially in a year like 2020, where so many people have been removed from beloved, damp, moldy, cold rehearsal rooms and relegated to our warm homes. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like years ago when Yamaha released the THR, I was like, oh my God, apartment amps. Of course, people live in apartments. But it's like, I don't know. I think it's really nice to be able to monitor at that level and in a bass specific unit. You know, something that little bit nicer than the Vox amp plug that has done so well for obvious reasons, because it is handy and it literally is that little bit of amplification, you know, that will sound nicer than going straight into your interface if you have one. I think this fills a gap, certainly, that I think was there certainly in the bass specific market and at that price point where, you know, you don't necessarily want to delve into kind of Helix and HX land and prices, but you do want just really, really nice monitoring. I really like that you can swap out the IORs as well. That's very cool.
That was the part I remember having the call with Bruce from ADG, actually, who we mentioned before. He's a wonderful friend of the podcast and is always really great at getting us stuff to try out and talking to us about the products. And I was sort of like, the Element was fine until he told me about sort of the fact that you could swap in the IRs. Then it becomes a tool that you can tailor specifically to yourself.
Yeah, completely.
I just think, you know, I bought a really nice oak desk this year, like a sort of dark, stained, walnutty looking oak desk. And I'm like, that dark glass Element looks great on this desk. So it's just I love that it's a premium product.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
rather than the AM plug.
Yeah, completely. I mean, that's no surprise coming from Dark Glass. Everything,
of course,
everything visually is very aesthetic from them. And I, you know, it does, like with a nice instrument, it does add to it. If it sounds nice, cool. If it looks nice, that is cool as well.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I just want a second. The headphone practice, I quite like, and I often have something with me just in my case anyway, whether or not I'm playing. But it's, you know, it's especially great for just being able to like the one I have is just has a built-in battery, so I can play it with, you know, just in a van or in a hotel room or something like that. And I think it's, you know, for like that kind of stuff, just to have something, it makes so much difference just having good clean signal. And then being able to tailor it somewhat, that it changes headphone practicing from just like, oh, this is, you know, like in essence, basically me having a slight boost from my bass to my headphones. Like it's, there's something really nice about it. I think I think there's a lot to be said for something that can give you another place to practice, whether or not it's in a flat or whether or not it's, you know, something now where there's always people around. Like it's not like,
yeah, totally.
You know, it's, you know, even if you could turn your amp up, everyone's always home at the moment, you know. And sometimes it's nice just to be able to be like, I'm just going to go in my own little world and you know, have headphones on. So I think, I mean, this is lots of flexibility here, and like it gives me like vibes like the old Apogee, like the Duet or like the Apogee One, like something
totally.
Like that. Like when you're talking about like the like those interfaces that were definitely Pro Tools, like MacBook Pros, when those were, you know, like it was all that vibe. So yeah, it's, yeah, I think this is great. I'm happily, I'm happy that this is here and we're chatting about it.
Yeah. Do we know, can it take a battery? I'm just looking at it here.
Does it take a battery
or just regular power?
No, I think it's.
I think it's just power.
Yeah. So the.
Hold on, I've got it somewhere.
Yeah.
Because what you made me think of there, JD, was you know, the other very regular need for I suppose mobile monitoring is when you're en route to a gig or you're backstage at a gig and you're, you know, you need to go over tunes if you're playing somebody else's stuff.
Well, that's what I use mine for, is learning my parts.
Cramming.
Yeah. But yeah, so what I have, just in case anyone's looking, I have the Phil Jones Big Head, which is the early one. There's a newer one now, but it's, I mean, that one's great because it just charges with a USB micro, and it's got an internal battery, so you just charge
it off a
USB or have it plugged in, and then it goes for hours and hours. So it's, yeah.
Awesome. And has it got like the aux in and all that, I'm sure.
Yeah, aux in, gain and volume, bass treble, boost cut.
Yeah.
All that fun stuff.
Has the Element got an aux in? I'm trying to look here. I haven't got a good photo in front of me, I don't think. Joe, are you back?
Yeah, I was looking for. I can't find it.
It does have an aux in.
I hope Bruce does find it.
Yeah, no, it's got a 3.5 mil. So just the the mini or the 1/8. Everyone.
Yes. See, I really like this. I like the idea, especially when so many of us are kind of spending more time on our computers, just with, I suppose, current events. Just the idea of removing the computer from the signal chain practice monitoring and kind of writing, which in my case I've been trying to use some of the kind of evening times to do. You can sometimes get a lot more done with just an aux in and a pedal unit. You know, I was doing that with my EBS Microbass for a long time over the summer. It was just popping the OGs in and having something playing from the phone so I could jam along to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, it's I definitely underplayed. You're right. You both convinced me on the sort of the practice element of it. That's something I don't think about, but it is definitely something that's incredibly relevant. And it's nice to be able to take the computer out of the mix and still retain the quality that you would get were you going into a door with a bunch of plugins.
Basically, it's just that Naomi and I practice.
I was just going to say, is it that we are simply witnessing your realization that you need to practice more?
I do not practice. Yeah, I really don't practice enough.
It's okay. The first step is admission. Yeah. First step is admission.
Great. Okay.
Second step is rage.
I have I've organized this quite badly because I realized the last two products that we were going to talk about, JD, you were going to present us with both of them. So why don't you pick one of them? And I'm sure you know you'll only be introducing them, and then we'll all be talking about them anyway.
Yeah. So with that, then I'll talk about the Ashdown Ant, and that it seems like the next step from headphone amp to 200 watt super small sort of. Can fit on the pedal board style amp. And mostly, you know, with this, like, I think it's great, but it's the thing that I really like about it is that it's just the idea that this is coming to bass players in the sense. So, you know, a couple years ago, you started seeing these on guitarist boards, or the most you could get would be like 50 or 100 watts or something like that. But this is a 200 watt bass amp that fits on your pedal board that sounds good and is like straightforward, you know, giving you sort of the tweakability you would need with just, you know, like your output, a bit of shaping and everything, but just being able to also use it for headphone practice or, you know, feeding it to a mains out or anything. But it's like I've used a lot of, you know, sort of the like preamps of varying different degrees over the years. Like one of my favorites currently is the Eden module, which doesn't get talked about nearly enough. I don't even by us, but it's one of my main ones. And it's I use it quite a bit because it's got all the tone shaping. And I use that as a headphone out. Like that's one of the things I'll use if I'm at home. Sort of practicing as I'll be playing through that. So I still get my normal tone and everything. And it feels like this is taking it from that and just having like an actual amp to go along with it so that you get the versatility of taking a good sounding amp with tone like on your board and just being able to like pick your board up and plug it into any speaker you wanted to or any cab you wanted to. And especially like gigging, you know, like, well, again, when those are things again, but like gigging where you share a backline, like being able to just like potentially take the amp from your pedal board and plug your pedal board straight into a cabinet, like really gives you a lot more control and, you know, then and not having to lug around like even a micro sized Class D head. I mean, which this is, but like just being able to have it on your pedal board just seems like such a cool thing and gives you a lot of control potentially, you know, like in a fly rig or any sort of touring rig or even just as a nice backup to have with you, you know, like no longer do you have to have like a complete separate head, which the rest of Polymath would thank you for, but you know, being able to have like a separate, you know, like a separate backup head that is good, that is already on your pedal board seems great.
Yeah, 100%. For me, the other part of the ant that I think makes it a very good product was when I got really into Helix. When I first got my Helix, I was I wanted to play it live, but I certainly didn't want to be relying on venue PAs. Like, who in their right mind's going to do that at the sort of level gigs that we play? So I this is before the ant came out. I went to Ashdown and got just like their 300 watt, their cheapest Class D head, so that I could run out of the Helix into the effects return and use that head as a as a power amp, and that way I could still use everything on the Helix and still use the preamp side of it and still get the most out of that. The Ant just seems like the product built for bass players, and this is what I said about the Newt on the guitar podcast. This feels like a product that's been built for bass players who are using Boss GT1000, Line 6 Helix,
yeah,
you know, all of those products. Take this and the HX Stomp. Well, you could get that on a Pedal Train Nano.
Yeah.
And you've got any rig you want. You know, those two things and a decent, you know, whatever, 112. And you've got a fantastic small venue rig that you can make sound like any amplifier. And so whilst this product isn't exciting, especially, it's 200 watts, it's a simple EQ, you know, it's virtually just a floor-based power amp, it does open a lot of doors for everything from simple fly rigs, as you were saying, JD, to people who want to experiment with all the incredible weird multi-effects. And that's a door that's normally shut to bass players, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the function of this that makes me really excited to not only for this, but to kind of see more of it. Hopefully it's sitting on the beginning of kind of a trend.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the thing I wanted to come back, is it this feels like the beginning of a trend, and it feels like Ashdown is the first legitimate marker for it. Mm-hmm. In like a reasonably priced, small, robust, big name. You know, like all of those boxes being ticked, it just sort of feels like, yep, I think any of us, like, not even just here, but like anyone would be happy being like, I'll grab this. I feel confident in this, you know, like, I just think it's, and I think, what is it, roughly about 300?
Yeah.
300
units? It's kind of like it's, 300.
It's, you know, like, it for peace of mind alone. And I just think about like just going to different rehearsal, you know, spaces all the time, or playing with different like groups, like being able to just, again, have this on my board, like on some sort of pedal train, and just be like, boom, here it is, like grab a cab and kind of go, is just such a, it's, yeah, I'm just really excited to see this product itself, but then also what comes next.
I think that is also part of it for me, that, you know, we'll be the question of this product when we come to putting it through into the list. I this is a fantastic product, but I agree, I think it's the start of it. It's not quite like, I need this to be 500 watts so that it can hold up at a louder show. And at the point they release a 500 watt one, I will get my GT1000 Core, the 500 watt version of this, on a Pedal Train Nano, and I will just take that and a cabinet, and that will be my rig. And that, I love the streamlinedness of that concept.
I am stoked at that idea. Just one less bag.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I remember thinking during well, not during, I mean, it's obviously still going, but like, you know, the kind of leaning towards super lightweight class D heads, thinking like, what could possibly be the next step? And then like, amongst everyone else going cabless with their, you know, with their Sims and kind of Helix setups. Maybe this is it. Maybe pedalboard bass amps are going to have a cool few years with, you know, combining with our multi-effects units so neatly. Yeah. Like it's, yeah, it's, I'm echoing what you guys are saying, but basically I would like to see these appearing on more boards. And like, exactly like you say, Joe, just with some more wattage, like a 300 or a 500, I would be super interested straight away. Cause like, like both of you, I'm kind of playing louder stuff as well, usually.
Yeah. Yeah. When these first came out, I thought about getting two, but then I was like, I'd just have to bring two cats. This wouldn't save anything.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But yes, very cool. Okay, we've got one more product before we start talking, you know, start looking at what's going to go through into our top sort of fives or threes or however we choose to do it. One more product, and JD, you're bringing that to us again, and it is the first and only... Oh, no, I'm sorry. There are two more products. I just realised I didn't highlight the second one. There are two, and there is one for Naomi and one for JD. I'm just fool. Naomi, why don't you talk about the next product?
Awesome. Well, I think it might be the last one led by myself. But yeah, it is, of course, the Boss OC5, which was the long, long awaited successor to the OC2 and the OC3 that we've become so familiar with over the years. But mostly, I think OC2 enthusiasts were really always going to get excited about the OC5 because it mirrors so many of... what we love about the OC2. So yeah, held on to a lot of the same design, except they Boss split it into two modes between vintage and poly, making it super popular and a source of excitement for guitarists as well. In the vintage setting, we're pretty much operating exactly as the OC5, except we also have the addition of the one octave up as well as one octave down and
The
OC2. Yeah. The OC5 I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah. In that mode, it's the same as an OC2, right?
Oh, yeah, it is. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
It is. Thank you for the correction. Yeah, and then in poly, we gain the addition of the plus one octave. But yeah, it sounds superb. Sounds damn close. I think there was probably some good discourse occurred on... whether it really, really matched the vintage tones of the OC2. I don't think anything will ever sound exactly as the OC2, but I think in a mix, are you really going to notice the difference? And no was my answer. I'm a huge fan. Design-wise, super neat. Nothing too wildly different from our usual Boss units. Slightly, like one thing I loved about the OC2 was how simple... the knob design is simply direct octave one and octave two. But yeah, I'm not going to spend loads of time talking about the design on top of the OC5, only to say that the two modes are a really nice addition. The octave up is a super nice addition as well. Kind of puts it in similar range to the Pitchfork and Pog type products. And then the poly, I didn't mess with too much, only because I was quite determined to only try it on bass. But it does have a cool function where in poly mode, it can reproduce octaves only for the lowest note that you play. So it's quite intelligent in that respect.
Yeah, it has the range control, which allows you to affect how many of the... the amount of notes that it applies the octave effect to, which is very cool. So definitely something more suitable for guitarists almost, because that's beneficial for chords, so that you're just getting a clean chord, but maybe with a synthetic bass player on the low end. But certainly the OC2 mode, incredibly useful. Having the polyphonic mode, I agree, it means that you've got a POG there as well. So there you go. That's the two most popular octave pedals for bass players, the Micropog and the OC2. And you've got that all in one box. I mean, at the time I was angry about the fact that it wasn't a Wazzacraft pedal, because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense, Matt Knight. It doesn't make sense, but it's also good because it means it's not expensive, you know. So the only people that it's affecting is Boss for this stupid decision not to make it a Wazzacraft pedal. But it does mean that it's an affordable Boss pedal.
I mean, I think to me, like, that's yes, this is exciting. I mean, it's an update. Basically, it's an updated reissue of a pedal that's been sorely like needed, but it's one of those things. But it, I think for me, the most exciting part is that it's not Wazzacraft, and that it is that they made basically something that sounds like our favorite OC2 reasonable to get, because you could still buy OC2s, but they're £500, you know, they're ridiculously expensive for what they are, you know, and the fact that the Boss themselves can be like, how about we just give you the ability to get that sound, or as close to that sound as you're going to be able to get in today's age with other benefits, then for a reasonable price, like that to me is the most exciting part of it, is it's like, it's just a really good octave pedal for the right bit. And it doesn't, and namely, like you're saying, like where it's very, very close. You know, and there's plenty of internet debate about what they sound like, but it feels like the fact that, like, I think the thing for me is like the OC3 is like, I always knew that my OC2 sounded better, and I don't have my OC2 anymore. And then now I feel like that's gone, and that's worth it in and of itself, is to be able to just not be like, yeah, but there was a better version of this, you know, or it's just this sounds as great, and it's not a vintage pedal, you know?
That's
so
completely. I mean, these things should be accessible, and, you know, in terms of a straight down the line octaver with really good tracking, it's really nice that is a current release and not a sought after thing where people are subjected to the heartbreak like I was when my OC2 arrived, suspiciously cheap, with one of its three knobs being a non-original. Agonizing times, guys. However, that was not the case with the OC5, which is why I'm nominating it for Gear of the Year 2020. Just one more note as well, excuse the pun, on the OC5 is, I really like that the octave up is, I mean, it's as it should be, in that it's transparent. So you don't get that sort of quite characteristic thing that you get with a lot of the POG models, that sort of slightly sitar-y tone. Do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like, it's quite subtle. At first, I wasn't into it because I was like having to dime the octave up just to get that poggy sound, because I was like, oh, surely this should sound like a pog, but it doesn't quite. And I think you're right, it's just it's you have to get into the mindset of this is designed to be a little bit more subtle and a little bit more organic.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's like maybe characteristic, and I'm guessing it's the resonance is kind of what makes it like that in the pog. And yeah, I kind of like that it's a little bit more maybe standardized. But yeah, huge fan, really pleased. Looking forward to hearing lots more people playing them, hopefully next year.
Yes, I think we shall. Okay, one product to go. And JD, it's another effect.
It is the Warm Audio Foxy Tone Box, which is, as you may say, is a fuzz sustain, octave sustain, all put in a lovely fuzzy orange container.
Velvet container.
Yeah. But like the
frickin' velvet.
Yeah. I mean, so good. So Warm Audio is mostly, to me, I knew of them mostly from like pro audio, like recording gear and microphones and, you know, compressors, preamps, those sorts of things. They've entered in with a couple of guitar-based effects, but really just really good effects that sound good on anything. So really versatile effects. But the Foxy Tone Box has, what are the controls on it? It's basically just
volume sustain, octave sustain,
and there's a mellow bright fuzz. So three knobs and a switch, which is great. just because it's cool. The other thing is, like, they're all, it's like what Warm Audio does with Pro Audio is they basically get really good components, put them in a very straightforward, simple, familiar circuit. So it's a lot of, you know, picking up like vintage vibes of the past kind of things, but being able to, I mean, this is for real nerds, like gold-plated PCB pads, carbon resistors, germanium, like premium, like film capacitors. Yeah. Like, it's like everything that's just like, ooh, ooh, I love it. And then, you know, like new old stock transistors, like all sorts of things just in these. And these boxes that are that different kind of fuzz. So I know we've talked a lot on this about the difference between like gated fuzz and like vintagey, you know, like a warm and woolly fuzz. Not necessarily the pickup wine that Kerry Norstrand does for his warm and woolly big blades. But but like that warm. Also, this box is woolly itself. But like taking it, it's much more like that sort of vibe, like this big, wide open, just like gaping maw of a fuzz tone. As and you know, like I love an octave up. I love an octave up on a fuzz as well. Like being able to switch it in and out just gives you that extra like brittle bite. Certainly for bass, I think it really helps cut through. This is just. Yeah. I think, if nothing else, this pedal is just super cool, and like I think of it more sort of as like a desktop sort of thing to run my 808s through, or to run, you know, basically anything else I have in like doing sort of reamping kind of things. It's not really a risk anytime soon, but like imagining this soaking up someone spilling beer on your pedal board, but like, you know, just like that velvet, that smoky beery velvet scent, but like
you'll have to just recreate it at home until gigs become a thing again.
Would not take long, to be fair.
Right. I'm just imagining you like staging beer spills and like,
but, oh no, drunk. Whoops. Yeah. Oh, wow. Oh yeah, that's definitely been gigging. Yeah.
It's from the gigging. It's from all the gigging.
Yeah. The gigging.
So many gigs. Yes. So many gigs.
Yeah. So many Zoom gigs. I set up my other laptop and play to myself.
Did a live stream the other night. Things got pretty wild.
Yeah.
Those crazy live streams. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I'm getting carried away making a joke where Joe and I should be offering our
That's
our
what
thoughts.
We do. It's a fuzz pedal in orange velvet with super high, highly prized components.
Yeah.
Boom.
Awesome. Did you mention, if you didn't, I'm reading that they actually sourced and used in the design the original new old stock transistors, which is awesome, the Fairchild ones.
Yeah.
And like you say as well, Warm Audio are possibly one of the better placed brands to be doing something like this as well, in terms of like a reissue of a really classic thing.
Yeah.
I'm excited for their move from studio gear into kind of adding more guitar products and pedal products. I'd be excited maybe for some more stuff that they may potentially look at.
I mean, they also make a jet phaser, phaser and a old fuzz is one of my favorite tones. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking more like Larry Graham slapping vibes from all those. Google Larry Graham slapping phaser and you'll see, but it's just like that sort of like tone, which is like that's an unreal sound for certainly for like the 70s.
Awesome. Yeah, the jet phaser, just looking at it, has awesome looks as well. Has that kind
their pedals just look fantastic.
Kind of fender blender look. Yeah, it's cool. But yeah, having heard, I think it was Pete Thorne on YouTube.
Yeah, he did a video on it.
Yeah, he did a sick demo of the Foxy Tone Box. Everything I've heard demo wise has made me desperate to get my hands on one to try. But super impressive. Really like their dedication to the original design and look. Tonally cool. I like the switch function as well, and just the placement. I know that falls under design, but yeah, the placement will be interesting on a board. Not something that I've had.
Definitely,
yeah, exactly.
For vintage, for vintage board enthusiasts, I think this sort of a shape.
Definitely, yeah. I would be curious of it at a gig, but yeah, I'd be in the same park as you on that one, JD. Superb pedal, definitely a standout for 2020 for me.
Yes, very cool. Okay, well, that is all of the products that we're bringing to the table. So to reiterate, the Ashdown Lowrider, the Serik Grand, the Music Man Stingray Short Scale, the Nordstrand Cat Bass, the Reverend Watt Plower Mark II, the Boss OC5, the Warm Audio Foxy Tone Fuzz, the Ashdown Ant, and the Dark Glass Element are all the products that we discuss. Now is the tough bit, because we've got to boil this down to, I reckon, if we each come up with a top three, and then we'll kind of take it from there. We'll see where we are. But JD, why don't you take us away first? What products do you think warrant your top three so far? What things for you would make it through at this point?
I would say the Cat Bass, the Nordstrand Essenix Cat Bass, the Reverend Watt Plower Mark II, and then I think I might go with the Ashdown Ant.
Right. Wow. Two basses and an amplifier making it through for you. What made you choose like the Watt Plower over the Serik Grand or the short scale?
I mean, just that everything about the Watt Plower is bang on with what I would want. And the fact that every time I look at one, it just makes me really want to buy it. I feel like there's a lot of like just my guts telling me that this is a super, super cool bass. It's the, you know, pricing of them, you can get them for about $12-$13. So I think like that was a big determining factor. And that they're a little, not necessarily like more traditional looking, but I think it's a bass that stands out, but doesn't like always stand out. You know, like it just seems like that's interesting.
Tasteful
bass.
Enough, yeah. But interesting enough without being tasteless. Yeah.
Yeah, it feels like it would be at home at something that's a little bit more aggressive. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, I think all these would work for that anyway, but it just has like that sort of, it feels a little over the top, and it feels like everything that I would do to that bass has already been done to that bass.
Yeah, it's a perfect kind of chop shop, like pre-customized bass. Yeah, I can definitely get behind that. Okay, so there we are, two basses and an amp. Naomi, how different or similar are your top three going to be?
Oh, I was trying to use that time to really frantically boil mine down to...
Well, no, that's what this is for. You can boil it down here. You don't need to announce them off the bat. What?
Putting undue pressure on myself.
No, yeah.
It's my first gear of the year, Joe. Go easy.
Of course. What's got you confused? What things are you juggling between?
I mean, I've narrowed down to six. It's still going to be a bit of a job to get to three. I'll tell you the, what I think are my definites. I think I can't not give the Serik Grand a shout, only because and I'm trying to really focus on, you know, the individual products and not kind of the merit of why I like the brand or why I like other products. I'm trying to keep it super focused on the individual pieces of gear that we're talking about just here. But I really like everything about the Grand. I like that it was, you know, arguably a little bit of a design risk to make a batch of kind of really unusual combinations of design choices. Yeah,
he could have played it safe, you know.
Exactly, yeah. Like, you know, his...
like the ordinary one he does, the double cut thing.
The Midwestern.
The Midwestern. He could have just done the Midwestern.
Exactly. You know? So he already has, you know, he already has beautiful body shapes already in place for sure. But yeah, I like that he took a risk. I like that it was a batch kind of, you know, maybe changing who it's accessible to. Maybe there are some people who are kind of nervous to go for a custom build. I know I would be, like, just because I change my mind on things so much and I'm incredibly impatient. So, like, there was a lot of things about the idea of the Grand and the Grand itself that I thought added up to being a really badass product. So that's, I think, a definite for me. I feel like I can't eliminate the Watt player just yet. Again, a superb base. I feel like everything we're talking about is, it's kind of like looking, I mean, obviously it being a signature model, but it is kind of like looking at someone's modded base and going, cool.
Yeah.
I want to mod the base the way you've modded your base. And I really like that. Yeah, I guess what I'm saying is it's just a really, really cool signature instrument. The cat base, again, so many cool design choices there, even if they are pulled a little more directly from an original model. And then beyond that, the ant. I'm really impressed by the ant. I'm really impressed by what it does. And I guess I'm excited to see more of it, like we were all saying too. And beyond that, then, I'm very biased towards the OC5 just because it's the only one I've tried of these. And yeah, the Foxy Tone Fuzz as well. That's where I'm at. And those are my reasons in no short terms for trying to whittle them down. I don't know. Tell me, am I doing it right? Am I doing Gear of the Year right, Joe?
This is exactly what you should be doing. And this is exactly what this part of the podcast is for, kind of working things down, working out what our favourites are. So we're supposed to do this live. It shouldn't come predetermined, and we should be very much influenced by what everyone's suggesting. I'll try and do mine if you want to see if anything that I suggest maybe makes you more certain on your choices. You know, when I looked at this list, I was like, crikey, I think mine's actually going to be the Nordstrand, the Grand, and like, I was so sure that those would be the two bases and then it would be one other thing.
Yeah.
But the Wattplower, just really, until we actually kind of looked at it and spoke about it, I was like, oh, this is better than I think this is or thought this was when it came out. This is actually more interesting than that. And I'm kind of finding myself in a position where I'm like, I think I prefer it to the Serik. I think the Serik Grand is very, very cool.
Mm.
And there's nothing to stop me putting three bases through, of course. I think the Serik is very cool, but I'm like, if I was actually put in a position of buying one or the other, I think I prefer the Wattplower, actually, just partially because obviously having a first circuit on board is fantastic, but for me the Serik Grand is just a little bit too bling, even in the sort of black with gold with the glitter plate. For me, it's just a little bit too much. I'm very conservative in the way I like things to look, and I think for that reason it's just slightly over the top for me. Whereas
you like instruments to be emerald green with an anchor on the first fret. Loads of pickups and lumen lay fret dots. Right. But this subtle, absolutely, yeah.
It's a terrible argument. I realise that. Okay, fine. That's fine. I don't like scratch plates that aren't normal scratch plate material. I can have that one.
Do you mean not normal material? Normal finishes?
I just want it to be, it needs to be black or tor or mint.
Okay, gotcha.
Parchment out of push, but that's it. So
I mean, it is parchment. I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. I think the cat base is kind of the obvious one for me. That's the one that no one seems to be arguing with. That one's definitely going through for me. I'm going to have to come back to sort of the Serik Grand or the Whatplower. I'm kind of in two minds. And then the third thing that I didn't realize I loved so much until we spoke about it was actually the Dark Glass Element. What an absolutely fantastic and kind of useful. I'm a sucker for something that's a bit interesting, and I love that bass guitarists have got a cool, weird, interesting product this year. So I'm kind of going in with that.
Extremely cool.
I am going to go for the Whatplower. I love it. I think it's really, really nice. I really did want to put that Serik through, but I'm going to say at the moment, unless I change my mind, that I'm saying the cat bass, the Element, and the Whatplower. I did almost put the Ant in. It is between the Ant and the Element there. Oh, so many choices. But yes, I think for now, those are the three that I am more committed to than any others.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing's locked in at this stage, though, Amy.
Okay.
So back at ya.
So what do we do now? Well, where do we go from here?
JD and I are like, we're scared, Joe.
Well, we're gonna
Baja Telly.
We're gonna need you to commit to two more products, Naomi. And then we're gonna have to whittle it down from there. So what do you think? Has anything that we've said convinced you more to go with one thing over anything else?
I'm buffering. I'm buffering hard.
DHL.
Well, I've technically already got that, you see.
Yeah, that one's already gone in. The Serik Grand is definitely up for grabs.
I think really what I'm deliberating over is between the cat bass and the Whatplower, because I think, you know, I'm trying to be objective and not get too caught up in personal taste.
Hmm.
This is
about personal taste, you know. This is
yeah,
our...
no, of course. Yeah, I don't know. Am I obsessing too much over having a mix? Is it okay to just have three basses? You know,
the idea is to have the three things that you like most. And if you are, when I'm deliberating over these things, I wait for us to be talking about a thing and me find myself like being like, yeah, this is great. How much is this product? I definitely want to buy this. Like, because there's a difference from being like, this is a great product, which I kind of feel was what I was doing when we were looking at the Grand. I was like, this is really cool. And then you look at things like the Dark Glass Element, and I'm like, man, I need to use this more. I know how much is this? Can I keep this? Like, and that's for me always the mark. It's like, what things do I personally want to use rather than things that I think look cool? Because all these things are cool. That's what got them into this shortlist.
True, absolutely. Yeah. And then another way I was trying to think of it as well was, what if I was to, you know, what if I'm trying to imagine, to create a picture in my mind of this thing called a gig? And of this list, what would I bring to said gig? And would it be, you know, because that can kind of help break it down if we were set on a bass and an effect and an amp, we'd be, you know, we'd be building a rig each, which would be kind of cool. I don't think I cannot include the Whatplower. I think the Whatplower is going to have to go in for me.
Whatplower goes through.
Yeah. And. I think I'm boiling down to being between the Foxy Tone and the OC5. I think the Ant and the Element are very exciting products. The Element in particular, I could see myself using. I feel like if I didn't have the Stomp that I'm using kind of as headphone mode currently, I'd probably be quite seriously looking at something like an Element for myself. Same with the Ant. If I didn't already have a lightweight head, I'd probably be really interested in something like the Ant. But what you're currently witnessing is me hoping that one of you guys will say something, because I'm becoming incredibly self-aware of emming and umming.
That's what this bit of the podcast is absolutely all about, is people being unsure. That's what the listeners pay for. They pay
to listen to us being
they pay
unsure
for this
one.
Chance to go and make their cup of tea so they can come back and exactly. hopefully I'll have decided.
I mean, I think it's saying that like everything is so good, right? That it's like yeah. it's like trying to figure out that last slot of like anything would fit, and we're trying to give the best option.
So I'll
sure. I mean it's good arguably that any of us are struggling.
If the thing is, if you like look at basically the kind of you're saying you're coming down between the Fuzz and the OC5.
Mm.
For me, like the Ant and the Element both offer so much more to the community, if that's something you're going to consider as being like a criteria.
It's a good factor.
We argue every year about what the criteria is, and we've agreed now that there is none. It's whatever you want the criteria to be.
Sure.
But if the community's something, then I think Dark Glass Element introducing something like that for bass players is very important. Ashdown introducing the Ant, like to bring Helix style playing as well as like pedal board rigs to bass players, like no one's ever done that, and I think that's a really cool thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
The OC5 is an absolutely fantastic product. I think it's the least exciting out of this list. Not that it's not a very essential product. It's just
I'd agree with that. I don't think it's not to use the term, it's not going to set the world on fire.
Exactly. I think there are like Boss have releases where, you know, if we isolate Boss as the company, Boss have releases where you're like, this is a wonderful product and this is going to be remembered as a wonderful product for a long time.
Absolutely.
You know, RE20, you know. Will always be an incredible product. RC3, TU3. Like these are products that stand the test of time. The OC5 is just going to fall into, this is going to be a thing. There will be an OC6 in a couple of years. And I don't know, it'll have another octave up on it. It's definitely a great recreation of the OC2. And it's good that we don't have to spend £300 or £400 for the OC2 anymore. And again, all I'm doing is saying what I think. You can completely disagree with me.
Yeah, and I definitely stand by us including it generally in the list because I think it was such a long-awaited kind of reissue, I suppose, or kind of update in the in the OC line from Boss. You know, the more you're talking, the more you are swinging me towards the Element because... everything about the Element is just really impressive, from its design to its function to its updatability. It is very, very slick indeed.
It is cool. But the Fuzz is the one that we haven't talked about. That's something you selected off the back. That neither me nor JD have added into our listing. What is it about the Fuzz that makes it stand out for you?
That makes it stand out for me. Obviously, first and foremost, tonally. From all I've heard of it, it's just really impressive in that classic way. I think it's a really good hark to the original 70s design. I think I like the attention to detail that Warm Audio have taken with sourcing some of the original components.
I guess that's something
and
not to be.
Actually, you know what? For something that is, for a product that is performing a pretty well-known function in terms of being a fuzz box, and granted it's simply taking off the original design, I do think it's a really cool design. I think it's really, really cool to look at. I think it will stand out on a pedal board. I think it... I think there's things about the design that, arguably I would prefer to more standard pedal designs.
Yeah, it is very cool. Only you can decide.
I think... That's the sound of my CPU usage going on. I think it's going to be the Foxy Tone Fuzz for me.
The Foxy Tone makes it through
in by a nose.
There we go. That's good, though. It's good when, the product listing was so good, it should be difficult for us to whittle it down. Okay, so that leaves us in a situation where JD has the Nordstrand bass, the Reverend Wattplower Mark II, and the Ashdown 8, Ashdown Ant. Naomi has the Serac Grand, the Reverend Wattplower, and the Warm Audio Foxy Tone Fuzz, and I've got the Nordstrand bass, the Dark Glass Element.
and the Reverend Whatplower, which means that the Warm Audio, Foxy Tone Fuzz, the Dark Glass Element, and the Ashdown Ant all have just the one vote, meaning that the Nordstrand and... Wait, well, what am I doing?
The Nordstrand and the Whatplower.
The Nordstrand and the Whatplower both come in with more. Now, every single one of us has selected the Whatplower, which kind of means, and this has been happening with a lot of the other episodes as well, it's almost not the winner that we're going to be arguing about here. It's the runners-up. Because I'd say if we've all picked the Whatplower, it's the only one that's had a complete... all hosts agree on that would make the Reverend Whatplower the best bass product of 2020.
I know, but I feel like we definitely need to keep arguing for a little bit because otherwise, isn't Guitar Nerds.
Sorry to cut across you there, JD. I actually was going to argue that we could save on arguing time because of this result.
We've still got to argue about the other two. That's what I meant. That's exactly what's been happening on the other episodes. We seem to all be agreeing on one product, but then everything else is divided. So the Whatplower is pretty much definitely going to win this category, but we do need to decide on the other two. Now, second place runners up. Again, we've got, the only other product to get more than one vote here is the Nordstrand Cat Bass, which... both me and JD selected, which kind of gets the Cat Bass a runners-up position. But there are, there's a second runner-up position to go for here, and we've all selected different products. Slightly trickier because there are three hosts on this rather than four. And we've got Dark Glass Element, the Warm Audio Foxy Tone, and the Ashdown Ant. Does anyone want to make an argument for their product going in over any of the competition?
Well, I, in a more bassist-y way, want to just say that for me, it was really between the Dark Glass Element and the Ashdown Ant. And it was kind of that, at the end of the day, there's a hair that made me shift to the Ant. So I would be more than happy with the Element being a choice.
I have to add to it the same point, essentially, which is, as we heard a moment ago, I was kind of caught between the Element and the Foxy Tone Fuzz. Really, the cool factor kind of won out for me with the Foxy Tone Fuzz, but not...
Yeah,
like I cannot argue that the Element isn't cool either. It's a really, really impressive design. I guess I'm sort of into rough around the edges design versus that super slick tech Apple era design, which maybe was the hair that won it for me with the Foxy Tone. But yeah, I think of the three that we're talking through, I would lean towards the Element.
It does seem to... Oh, sorry, carry on.
I'm starting to worry a bit here. Are we too nice, me and JD?
No.
I feel like this is all going really well everyone's being very polite to one another. Like, do you need us to dial it up?
We are supportive bass players.
Exactly. This is something I was talking to my partner Emma about doing this, and I was like, I think this is the first one we've all done together as a Gear of the Year. Obviously, we've got whatever since 2013 was the first Gear of the Year podcast for the other Guitar Nerds hosts. But I was saying that this was going to be a very different, a different type of thing from the normal Gear of the Year, simply because kind of when I decided I wanted to do bass Guitar Nerds podcast and I started looking for the hosts, it was me looking for hosts that I thought had decent opinions on equipment, whereas Guitar Nerds is something that we were all thrown into from when we were much younger and all just worked in the same shop. We all completely disagree on products. We've all got very, very different taste, and it makes that might be entertaining, but that is not productive for making an end list of Gear of the Year products. Not a healthy one in any case. Certainly some of the things we have ended up with in the past, like as much as me and Matt love Echo Lion pedals. Well, exactly. We've had like power supplies, you know, win categories simply because they were the one thing that weren't being argued about. You know, so they've sort of slipped under the radar. Everyone agrees it's quite a good product. And that's the only time we'll agree, because everything else will fundamentally disagree on. In fact, dear listener, as well as Bass Guitar Notes host, as we're recording this episode, I've already recorded the finale of Guitar Nerds, which, listener, you won't hear until tomorrow. And I will. You're going to look forward to it. It's the angriest I have ever been on a podcast. We all finished the podcast, and I think it's the shortest amount of conversation any of us have had with each other when we finished it up. And we're just like, right, okay, cool. Thanks, everyone. So just be prepared for the most amount of backstabbing, rule changing, and just, you know, it's not good. Whereas I have been backstabbed. In tomorrow's episode, you will witness an awful backstabbing.
This is just unthinkable to JD and I.
Exactly. Whereas I feel like we here have come up with a great list. This is actually a fantastic run of products.
Yeah. So let's. So what we're looking at is the Revan Wattplower Mark II.
Yeah.
And do we want to check? So there's that. Following that, it sounds like we're looking at the Nordstrom Acetin X Cat Bass and the Dark Glass Element in spots 2 and 3.
That's correct, yeah.
Yes.
Is it like a true 2 and 3, or is it just sort of like...
They're runners-up, to be honest. Yeah. So it's like both just get called runners-up when we announce it. That's like we just have a winner. You know, everyone gets like a web sticker or whatever. So so there's a runner-up and a winner.
I just say like... I mean, really, when I was thinking about it, I was like, I can't imagine really anything beating the Acetin Nix. But then,
I'm surprised it didn't win.
Yeah, but when Naomi like was talking about the Wattplower, it was just like there was a thing. I was like, oh, yeah, like that is so cool, and it's like ever so slightly probably a bit more my vibe. But I love the cat bass so much, and it's. Yeah, it's just so interesting. It's also interesting, like this is a really good list. I think we did well here.
I think this is strong. I think the Dark Glass. So dear listener, that's the Dark Glass Element and Nordstrand Acetin X Cat Bass in runners up in the Revan Wattplower Mark II, winning the category of bass guitar in the Gear of the Year 2020 podcast series. I'm pretty happy with this. The Dark Glass Element represents technology and also isolated playing in the year of isolation. So I'm glad we've got a topical product in there. The Acetin X is incredibly important, quite close to our hearts as well. You know, it's based on Juan Alderete's
Goya Panther.
Goya
Panther.
Panther. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, and you know, Juan Alderete, obviously, he's still recovering at the moment, and such an important cornerstone of the bass guitar community. So I'm glad there's something in there that had his hand in it. And then the Revan Wattplower, I'm just glad to see Revan kind of win something, because they're such a fantastic brand. Ever seem to be the runners-up in the Guitar Nerds podcast, despite the fact that we talk about them so much. So nice to see something win. And also, just Mike Watt, what an incredible bass player as well. So I'm, you know, glad to...
What a dude.
Glad to see, yeah, what an absolute dude. So I'm glad to see kind of something as cool from such a cool man, you know, finish up top of the list. So there we have it. Well done, hosts. Well done.
Good job. Good job,
I had a really
Joe.
Nice
good job,
time.
Naomi.
Yes. Yeah, good job, guys.
That was good. That was good. Well, dear listener, thank you for tuning in. And you can tune back in tomorrow for the most amount of carnage on any Gear of the Year podcast to date. So, yes, that's one more episode tomorrow. And then that will be the end for this year. And we, me, JD, and Naomi, will be back in 2021 with more of this bass guitar nerdery.
Wait, is farewell. Is that where we're announcing it?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.